Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us for today's podcast. This is an inaugural podcast, actually, a first of its kind, devoted to the Drive World Expo and Conference taking place in Santa Clara, California, August 27th to 29th. There are 7 billion people in the world, and the one who knows the most about this conference is Suzanne DeFree of Informa Markets, and we're very fortunate that Suzanne has agreed to join us today to talk about the conference and reasons to attend and what you can expect when you do attend. Suzanne, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jack.
My pleasure, our pleasure, actually. Suzanne, I thought before we kind of get into the conference a little bit, one of the things we are all very good at in the business world is coming up with these wonderful titles. And then, of course, we read these titles and we think, well, what does that mean? So I thought maybe one way to kick this off is that you are the Brand Director, Intelligent Systems and Design at Informa Markets. If you wouldn't mind, how about just taking a minute and tell us what exactly does that mean? What do you do at Informa, Suzanne?
Sure. So I oversee several brands within Informa Markets that include the coded words that you just said, intelligent systems and designs. Basically, if it has an electronic component that makes the market smart, I'm involved with that brand in some way. And those brands include the Drive World Conference and Expo that we're talking about today, our Embedded Systems Conference, the DesignCon event, which is in January of every year, design and manufacturing, which really focuses on the manufacturing side, including 3D printing, again, where you need electronics to help make manufacturing smarter, design news media, which is a fantastic, very well-established media brand, and I said Drive World, so that is all of them.
Yes, you did. So at the risk of putting out a personal plug here, I'm a monthly contributor to Design News, so I know this is self-serving, but it is a fabulous outlet for keeping up on what's going on. So we're certainly on the same page there. Suzanne, as you pointed out, you know, you oversee a lot of things in regard to the electronic world, but Informa as a company really touches a lot of different sectors, a lot of different markets. Why this show? And since this is the first of its kind, how long has this been in the works? How did it come about?
Yeah, good question. So we've been working on Drive World Conference and Expo for quite some time. As you can imagine, when you work at a company as large and influential as Informa, the largest events company in the world, we don't take steps like launching an event very lightly. We do a lot of research beforehand, and we've been working on Drive World for almost 3 years now. It was born out of our other trusted electronics brand, DesignCon, which I mentioned happens in January, and that serves the chip and board level engineer, and the Embedded Systems Conference, or ESC as we call it, which this year celebrates 30 years of influencing innovation in embedded systems designs. And in reviewing attendee titles to these shows, the areas that they were interested in, and what sessions were highly attended, we began to see more and more attention paid to the application of our attendees' engineering skills in the automotive, electronics, and intelligence world. So,
I'm sorry, go on, please.
Oh, there are really good reasons that engineers are starting to pay attention to this. For example, 20% of car sales by 2025, are expected to be for connected or autonomous vehicles. Just next year, in 2020, the U.S. market spend on autonomous vehicles combined with electric vehicles and the semiconductor and connectivity hardware and software supporting those smart mobility designs is expected to grow about 14% and reach $120 billion opportunity. And something like 35% of a car's value is expected to come from electronics in 2020. And that's up from 20% just 3 years ago in 2017. And that adds up to a really good career and design opportunity for engineers.
Now, I just want to pick up on I just want to pick up on something you said there about the $120 billion and that being up 14%. Are you saying, and I may have misunderstood this, Are you saying that's a next year projection or by 2025 projection? If you could just round out that number for us a little bit.
That one's by 2020. So that's just next year.
That's next year. So we're getting to some pretty big numbers pretty quick.
We are.
You already touched on this a little bit. So you've talked about the embedded systems conference, which is also a big part of the Drive World conference. And for this event, you've combined the two. This is really two shows in one.
It is. It is indeed. Yeah. So Drive World focuses again on that automotive electronics and intelligence aspect. And even though we're talking about automotive, we don't think the autonomous will stop at cars. We expect the technology that makes up these future autonomous vehicles, the sensors, the 5G, the AI, the vision systems, all of that type of really exciting stuff. We'll have other applications beyond autonomy, like robotics and robotics and aerospace, defense, healthcare. So while we've designed Drive...
That people will see in Santa Clara. There are non-automotive applications taking place for the embedded systems.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. ESC stays focused on hardware, software, and IoT for applications that could be automotive or could be consumer electronics. It can be whatever out there needs that brain, whatever needs to be intelligence, it needs an embedded system. So engineers still want that foundation of education and information to create those innovations of tomorrow. But now we're giving them the opportunity, should they buy an ESC pass, to also attend Drive World and catch up on the latest.
So you mentioned, I'm sorry?
So they have the opportunity to get both the foundational at ESC and then catch up on automotive electronics.
So obviously in the news there's been a great deal in the last few years about self-driving vehicles, autonomous vehicles. I would feel fairly confident that that's in people's minds, that at least that awareness has been growing, of a non-automotive application that maybe is not in the public's awareness just yet. What would you pick as maybe a top one or a top one or two applications for an autonomous, I'll simply say device, not even vehicle, autonomous fill in the blank?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot of applications within military and defense for autonomous.
Okay.
I don't think there'll be, well, I don't want to get political or talk about the reasons for war, but pretty soon we'll be able to send more of these unmanned vehicles in to take care of the risky parts. We've already started down that road devices. Go out and find landmines, all of those types of things. You know, and I think that's a great application area. I also think robotics certainly will pick up in autonomy. You know, as you know, Jack, from some of our other events, we have a great level of robotics already on the show floor, and now those robotics for manufacturing are starting to be able to interact with their environments more, the smarter cobots, and eventually they should be able to operate completely autonomously.
Okay. That's a great overview. Thank you. Now, just kind of veering back to the vehicles for a second, I think there's a terrific, I don't know if it's a catchphrase or a tagline, but when people go to the website, right there on the homepage, I believe it is, the car is the next must-have consumer electronic. Let's just say you are a 56-year-old, lots of gray in the beard, stick in the mud like I am. And you've been dragged into the age of texting and all of that, kicking and screaming. So you've always had the sort of arm's length relationship to the whole electronic world. I know that sounds really odd, but it's in my case, it's absolutely true. Let's build on that phrase, the next must-have consumer electronic. What does that mean to you, and what should it mean to me, pro and con? I mean, we'll round out the phrase.
So it means a lot of convenience, really. If you think back over the last few decades in tech, we've had two major revolutions, in my opinion. First, we had the PC revolution, where people like Wozniak, Jobs, Gates helped propel computers into every home, and they became convenience items, right? It's very convenient to have my laptop right in front of me right now, opposed to going to my office, my local office that's an hour and a half away, to sit in front of a desktop and have to be connected manually to my coworkers. Then we had the communications revolution with smartphones. Again, just like computers, in good part that advancement came from properly designed embedded systems. And now smartphones are in the hands of the masses, right? I'm talking to you now on a smartphone, and I'm going to guess that you are recording this podcast on a laptop.
Actually, I'm not. I'm recording it on a smartphone.
But you
I
are.
Record it on a laptop. Yes, I am. So we're both being pretty convenient and mobile today. Absolutely.
There we go. And I don't want to date myself, but I remember when there were must-have computers, right? I remember the Macs with the little handles and the candy colors, and I remember absolutely having to have a Dell because it was the best computer. It was the most convenient one for me. It offered me the easiest way of life. And, you know, we still see folks line up for the latest iPhones. That's always on the news whenever a new iPhone comes out. And these things...
Well, I can beat you at the dating game because my first PC experience was an IBM PC with two floppy hard drives, you know, two drives for two floppies. So
very nice. I had the original Apple that was about a 6-inch screen. It was crazy with the green and everything. Yeah,
that's right. Green monochrome. Yep, absolutely. So obviously we've come a long way. But you know, you and I would certainly have a shared experience from those early PCs, the early software, about, oh, my God, you can do this. Oh, my God, you can do that. And you start to do it. And yes, there's a whole level of productivity, or to use your word, convenience, that starts to develop. But there's always a hype over and above the reality. And that's not a criticism. I think that's just human nature. I've seen it in 3D printing. I think we see it in a lot of things. So for many, many reasons, I'm on board with autonomous self-driving vehicles. I'm on board. But there's always a level of unrealistic expectation or hype. So for the benefit of those listening, what should not we be expecting by 2025 or whatever the time frame is?
Yeah. So I think we will get to this third revolution of autonomous vehicles and autonomy everywhere, right? So PCs, phones, and then this autonomous, but it's not going to happen in the next 5 years. You're recording me, so I can't use the language I would like to use, but it's
Well, I don't think this doesn't have to be G-rated. You're free to say what you want to say.
I'll say it's disturbing and somewhat insulting to engineers when we say that level 5 self-driving vehicles are going to be on the streets everywhere in 5 years. There may be a handful, but it's not going to be the common vehicle out there. There's just so much more to do, so much more engineering work to do to get all of these systems to work together, to get the infrastructure changes in place, to get the government and regulations needed, you know. Some estimates are saying 15 years out. Some are saying 10 years out. I really don't know when we will get there, but I know that over the next 5 years, we will make a lot of strides getting us closer to autonomy.
Thank you for bringing up that word that is always in the back of my mind. You said legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And because of what you and I do, very close to the tech world, observing these things, going to trade shows, you know, we probably have a kind of natural centrism to what's going on in these areas. But in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, what's the unintended consequence for which some legislation, to use your word, will end up being reactive? And I've had people say to me, well, what do you mean? And I say, well, think of it this way. First, we invented the automobile. Then we realized we need lines on the road. We need stop signs and traffic lights. But all of that was reactive. So I'm so grateful you brought up the word legislation. What is it possible to know what we're going to need? And is it possible to be proactive about that?
Yeah, I think that engineers are being extremely proactive, to be honest with you. maybe not the government officials, right, because there's a different wavelength there. And I think part of the issue with the regulations and the legislation will be that our government officials need to understand this technology. And there are a lot of engineers out there who are working towards that, like Sarah Sargent at VFI Labs has done an extensive amount of work with her local government in Minneapolis to help them understand what needs to be done to get these cars on the road safely and securely for the passengers as well as pedestrians. And in fact, while I'm talking about VSI, they are taking a road trip from Minneapolis out to Drive. It's about 2,000 miles, and they'll be doing it in a Level 3 vehicle to test all of the systems in real life in different environments to see what is safe and what isn't safe and what still needs working on so that they can, you know, help us get to that safe and secure future and help educate legislation on what needs to be done.
I'm going to come back to a phrase that you just used there, but before we do that, this individual, I believe you said Sarah Sargent, working in Minnesota about educating government officials. Do we know yet, or is it too soon? Is there a specific legislative proposal, and that's probably not the right language, where someone's saying we're going to need a law for this specifically, or are all those concepts still being worked out?
There are a lot of people saying we need a lot of different laws right now. Really, it's again, this is a revolution, right? So the government needs to catch up with the tech.
Right.
Just as, you know, we're still working out legislation as to social media. We're still working out legislation
yeah.
as to public and private, right? And how long has Facebook been around? So we are going to get there. I do believe we're going to get there largely because there are so many really good engineers volunteering their time and their intelligence and their knowledge to make sure we do get there. But that's not coming tomorrow. I think the technology will be readily available ready for use, possibly not available for legal reasons, but certainly ready for use before we get to the legislative side.
Okay. So that was a really interesting thing you said there a minute ago. They're driving from Minnesota to California in a Level 3 vehicle. I would be pretty confident that Level 5 is a term not many people know. So first off, have we had Levels 1 through 4? Because if we did, I think I missed it. So take us through Levels 1 through 4 as best you can, and now what does Level 5 mean?
Sure. So these are the levels of autonomy defined by the SAE, the leading group for automotive electronics out there, Society of Automotive Electronics.
I'm sorry, did you SAE like SAM or FAE? I want to make sure everyone gets that.
S as in Sam, A-E.
Sam, Alfred, engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it.
SAE now, but it
SAE.
Used to stand for Society of Automotive Engineers.
Got it. Okay.
And they actually, there are six levels, actually, because they start at zero, which is where many of us are right now, where the driver does everything in the car, all the driving. It's all up to the driver. That's what my car is. I'm a stick shift 10-year-old car driver myself.
Okay.
Then in level one, you've got advanced driver assistance systems, or ADAS, on the vehicle that can sometimes assist a human driver, usually either with steering or braking or acceleration, but not at the same time. Then level two, you've got again, it's an ADAS system on the vehicle that can control both steering and braking or accelerating at the same time. But the human driver must continue to give the vehicle its full attention. Usually there's some type of monitoring in place to make sure that the driver is paying attention and not just watching a movie on their phone. And level three, which is the level of the car that VSI will be driving out to our show, Drive World, and then we'll be doing demos, by the way, on the show floor to explain the technology and for any attendees that want to take a ride. This is an automated driving system where the vehicle itself can perform all of the driving tasks under some circumstances, and those circumstances often have to do with weather. The driver, the human driver, must be ready to take back control at any time, and again, there's usually sensors involved, so there could be sensors to make sure that the human driver's hands are on the wheel. Maybe there are sensors in your windshield to make sure that you are indeed looking ahead. Level 4, again, it's an automated driving system where the vehicle can perform all of the driving tasks and monitor the driving environment, essentially doing all the driving under, again, certain circumstances, but the human does not have to pay attention in those circumstances. So in that case, given the weather, given other circumstances, you could just be in your car watching a movie on your phone. And then in level 5, you get in the car, you tell it where you want to go, and it takes you. The human really is just a passenger, and the car does all the driving.
That's first off, that was a great overview, and I was not aware of those distinctions. So I'm sure for all the people listening, it's as insightful and informative for them as it is for me. Now, so this is a bit of a personal note, but it certainly ties in, and you made me think of it as we were going from level to level. I won't say the make and model, but last September, I bought a new car, mm-hmm. or at least a new car for me. It was a pre-owned 2016 vehicle, and although I did my research, a feature it has that I somehow didn't realize when I bought it is when you put the cruise control on, and I'm a cruise control guy all night and all day. I love the gas mileage you get with it and everything. Mm-hmm. There's a front-end sensor that prevents me, and I love this, from getting too close to the car in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody comes up alongside and they get between me and the car in front of me, then my car automatically adjusts to go farther back. And I will tell you very candidly, it took me a solid month to really get comfortable with this, because you're driving along at, say, 60 or 65 miles an hour on the highway. You see a sea of red taillights suddenly lighting up in front of you, and I would start to hover my foot over the brake pad, but I wouldn't press it. And sure enough, the car would start to adjust all the way down to, 10 or 15 miles an hour. And it gave me a break on insurance. The safety feature actually brought my insurance down, even though we were putting a new car on the policy. So yeah. In that sense, I was like, wow, this is fabulous. But it did take some getting used to. So I think, in my limited way, and think listening to what you talk about with the autonomy and what the car can do as we get more comfortable and the technology expands, there's a massive public safety element here that's really, really positive, I would think. I mean, this could just do so much good for when you look at the public and texting and driving and drinking and driving and social mm-hmm. problems we've had for a long time. The widespread good here could really be something, I would think.
Yeah, it's really a tremendous safety opportunity. I'm glad you bring that up as well, because that does not get anywhere near the press it should, right? We're constantly hearing about, oh, this autonomous car hit this little old lady who was just trying to cross this. Oh, my gosh, cars are so dangerous. What doesn't make the news is numbers from the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration and other groups that talk about the amount of people who die every year from driver-caused accidents. It's and this is a little frightening, but the number of people that die a day equals the amount of people who ride on a small plane. So if there was a small plane going down every day, I guarantee you, my boss would have a lot more budget in my T&E spend, because I would not be getting on a plane unless it was absolutely necessary. Yet, after this call, I will happily get in my car and drive to where I need to be. Like what you just pointed out with texting and driving and drinking and driving, the safety applications here, we'll be saving a lot of lives once we get to this this level 5. And actually, before we get to level 5, at levels 3 and 4, you'll see a lot of things implemented as well that will help save lives. And like you're talking about, it sounds like you possibly have a level 2 vehicle. Let's just say you were distracted for a moment, and all of a sudden there was an accident 10 cars ahead, and you were in cruise control in a previous vehicle. It would just keep cruising you right along into the back of somebody's...
Yes, it would.
Yeah. But with this technology, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and I'm very candid saying, you know, it really was a solid month for me to not have my foot hovering over the brake pad as I'm waiting for the car to adjust, but it always has. And I have to say I am very, very satisfied that the car can do that. It's terrific. But just to get back to something you said there about it not getting enough attention, I read something in the last 6 or 8 months about autonomous vehicles, and I thought, wow, what a great way to put it. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but the person who was very pro autonomous vehicle and pro pushing the technology forward had a statistic. He said, if you look at the total miles driven by an autonomous vehicle as of today, and I don't know what the total miles are, mm-hmm. in relation to the number of incidents in an autonomous vehicle, and then you look at the total miles driven, as we've been driving them, you know, year to year ourselves, to the number of incidents by human-caused accidents, the ratio is so far in favor of autonomous vehicles, like a merest fraction, we should be all over this.
I mean,
it's to your point, the number of accidents just on a daily basis, you'd think, wow, we should be pushing this forward pretty aggressively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not to mention the job opportunities it brings to engineers, the revenue opportunities. It's really a phenomenal market. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this show.
We wouldn't be doing the show. And I don't want to get into a whole other tangent here, and I certainly don't want to bring up a negative, but not in 2025, not. But at some point, as this truly gets to be self-driving and autonomous, that whole job market for taxi drivers, bus drivers, maybe even one day truck drivers, those might become debatable occupations. Not in 2025. I'm not saying that, and I don't think you are either. But at some point, you could see where a whole line of work starts to develop a question mark. What job skills will start to fade away? It's great that there'll be more jobs for engineers and so on, but there will be some shift in the labor markets due to a change that is this impactful.
Oh, absolutely, and I think that's going to impact the legislation in my own personal opinion. There are states that trucking, let's say, is a huge economic driver for them. They are not going to immediately be a fan of this. But, you know, there was pushback when we moved to manufactured materials and sewing machines, right, opposed to people sewing by hand or spinning wheels. Things evolve and other opportunities evolve from them, right? We talk about engineers, but there's also folks who have to watch the data and track all of that. There are other opportunities that will come out of this that will, in my opinion, make up for any jobs that are displaced.
And I think that's such an important point. Always look for, okay, yes, certain job skills will decrease in demand, others will increase, and there'll be whole new opportunities we didn't have before. Suzanne, I just wanted to, we're kind of going to come into the home stretch here, but I think something I'd like to give you an opportunity to do, obviously, you said 3 years, an enormous amount of work, planning, effort has gone into the Drive World Conference. What would you like people to walk out of the conference with? They come in with whatever preconceptions or knowledge they've had. What would you like them to walk out thinking, wow, I didn't know blank?
You know, we've worked with a lot of really important and influential partners. We've worked with the IEEE USA, SAE, Lindley Group, Embedded Vision Alliance, VSI Labs, all to make sure that the conference and the expo presented at Drive World Conference and Expo with the Embedded Systems Conference is on the mark for what they need. We want attendees mm-hmm. to leave our event this August with the information that they need to take the next step in designing tomorrow's autonomy and embedded systems. And our tagline for the show is join the movement, because I really do truly believe we're at this juncture, we're going forward towards that next tech revolution in mobility, and those engineers who attend will gain the skills they need to be part of that. That's what I hope people walk out of, and they will walk out of our event list.
And just to emphasize, although anyone can attend, this is really an engineering-centric show, electrical and mechanical engineers, probably industrial designers as well, who are either in the field or in terms of career opportunities where they might want to take their career. This is an excellent forum to see everything that's going on, whether it's autonomous vehicles or embedded systems.
Yes. Very true.
Okay. Well, Suzanne, thank you. Thank you very much for all the time. Thank you for all the insight. For all of our viewers, this is the Drive World Conference and Expo. It's taking place in Santa Clara, California on August 27th to 29th. And you know what I don't have here in front of me, Suzanne? And I made a note that I should have in front of me. What is the web address so people can go right to it if they want to learn more and register?
Sure. It's driveworldexpo.com.
Pretty straightforward, driveworldexpo.com. Okay. So to all of you who heard this, I'll tell you very candidly, I don't have an engineering background, and if I could make it there at the end of August, I sure would. I think this is going to be a great event. Suzanne, thank you for sharing all of your insight and your time. Congratulations on bringing this show to fruition, and we'll look forward to hearing how it went for you afterward.
Thanks so much for your time, Jack. We hope to see you in just a few weeks here at Drive World Conference next, though.
Okay, if I can make it, I certainly will. Okie doke. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.